And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 813. It's not a team preview tonight, folks. It's a little different around here. We're going to talk some projections. Oopsie projections came out recently. So we're going to talk about some hitting standouts, potentially good, bad, indifferent. Who knows? We'll talk about that. We'll talk about someone's early drafting because he's finally joined the chaos that is early season drafting and much more. And in order to help me do all this deep diving and talk drafts is my co-host. It's been a little while, a couple weeks since we last talked. You can find him on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. Ben Tate, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing good, Bubba. Yeah, a little break like you were saying, so but it's good to be back on. And you have to be exhausted from all the pods because I have not been able to catch up with everything that you've been putting out there. I think I got as far as the East, the AL East, and then I've left off there, so I have a lot of work to do. So hopefully for your sake, it's good to switch it up. Yeah, I know you have the other show with Ryan, so you always switch it up with that. But Bench with Bubba is getting a little shake up tonight.
Yes, we are getting a shake up for the good. For the good. We'll have another shake up episode. I have another guest coming on next week to mix things up. We'll see if we can figure our schedule out. Last week was I was out of town for half the week, made it complicated. So we're getting back at it. We're in mid January. Pitchers and catchers report in like 3 weeks. So like baseball's here is where I look at it. And we have some more free agents that have to come in here. But like real quick, before we talk drafts, since this is a Yankees move, I guess I should ask you, what are your thoughts on Ryan Weathers joining the club? Is this like an actual thing that works for you guys? Are you happy about it? Because if you just watch Twitter, which obviously is always entertaining, it was either all or nothing. People loved it or hated it. So where are you at on this one?
Well, four prospects feels like a lot. I did not notice any of their names though, so but I don't get too deep into the weeds when it comes to that stuff anyway. But yeah, so it basically knocks out Ryan Yarbrough from the rotation, which there's a good chance at some point they'll need him to start games anyway, just the way that pitchers get hurt. But Weathers himself could get hurt because he had issues the last couple seasons staying healthy. So because of the upside, I like it, and I don't trust Will Warren that much. I don't trust Luis Heal. We covered them, I think, in the Yankees preview. I'm pretty down on both of them, more so Heal than Warren. And Weathers, I liked him. I think going into the year he got hurt, and then I know last year in Fab he was a huge ad, and people were spending a ton of money on him. And turns out it wasn't the best investment in Weathers, just because you never know with injuries. But hopefully he's healed up by now. He's only 26, so he could stick around with the Yankees for a long time. And I think it probably means they're not going to sign anybody on the pitching front, probably. But I'm optimistic with how he's going to do. I think he, because right now it's Fried, then Schlittler, Warren, Weathers, and Heal. So Weathers, he's got to perform for them. They need it right now until they get Cole and Rodon back.
Yeah, it feels like they're just hoping that Rodon can come back by sometime in middle to late May, and then you get Cole around the All-Star break, give or take, and they're hoping that's the answer that they need just to fill the gaps until then. All right, draft season. Last time we talked 2 weeks ago, you were kicking off your draft season. You finished 1DC. You're in the middle of 2 right now. You're in a 4 honey. You've done 2, well, 1.5 150s, basically. Just in general, what are our thoughts on draft season since you were disciplined enough to wait and miss all the expected value we talk about? No, I'm just kidding. What's your thoughts on early draft season since you are now in the pool?
Well, as you mentioned, yeah, I went from doing 0 drafts to now 2 at once, which is something I never do. Like maybe I'll have one end like in the round. Like,
I rarely ever do that, and I draft a lot, so that's pretty impressive.
It's mainly just to get, like I was telling you, it's mainly to get in like in line with the 400s because they don't fill as often as the regular DCs, so you have to kind of get in there and get rolling to continuously do them. But so nothing. I'm not gonna have anything too groundbreaking, probably takes wise, but just closers, you have to have a plan because come pick like 140, the good ones are like they're all gone. It seems like at least the ones that at least have a job, and it's even worse than it was last year. We thought last year was bad with closers. At least I did, and some guys like Fairbanks and Robert Torres and would kind of fall. He had the Red Sox guys that were a little unsure, and some other jobs were going like in the early 200s. But there's like nobody remotely you can be optimistic about being a closer going at that point in the draft right now. So that's challenging. Still getting a sense for the positions. It's funny though. I'm only three DCs in, and I'm already getting to that point of like the deep reserves where I'm seeing the same guys over and over again, and I don't want to take them all over and over again. I'm probably gonna do six. Well, I guess it's seven DCs, so I'm doing the DC auction. So like, I need to kind of shake up who I'm taking for my bench spots, because yeah, it's your bench, and if they don't do well, you can survive. But if all your teams have the same guys who all get hurt or all don't do well, then you're not gonna hit on any late round targets. So just trying to diversify my bench is going to be more of a priority over the next couple of DCs I do. And I don't know, it's just getting a sense for I think Ryan preaches it a lot. I think he kind of focuses more on like the earlier part of this part of the draft, but from like pick 200 on, when you're filling out your roster, trying to figure out, okay, who's going to get the most playing time. Cause I always try to avoid the platoon outfielders. And I'm saying the outfielders because the majority of the platoon bats in the pool are outfielders. I think like the corners are the next frequent players that are in a platoon. So just making sure that outfield is covered, because outfield does, like, the top tier of outfield is awesome, and then it really drops off. And then I was saying in the Patreon or the Discord the other day how I kind of like the 100 outfielders, but there's always some risk with those guys. It's like trying to figure out which is the best one. So, and like shortstops has a big drop off too. But when you say all these drop offs happen, it just means that the quality of the players is going down, which is naturally going to happen as you go into the draft. You have to figure out who you like best out of those lesser tier players. And through three, I think I've tried a couple different builds with waiting on closer, like in my 150, it was my 400. I didn't get a strong RP2. I just wanted to see how it went. And I think I did all right getting my RP 2 and 3, but I don't want to try to do that all the time. And my remaining DCs, it's kind of scary.
Yeah, I remember you were texting me and Ryan kind of how your first few rounds are going and the lay of the land and the learning curve that was taking place on certain things. And yeah, it's one of those, I agree with all of it. It's the good thing about the DCs early on is, like you mentioned, 200 and beyond with playing time, it really makes you dig into rosters and try to figure things out. And kind of get your feel of what's going to potentially, hopefully, unfold in 2026 when it comes to certain teams, because not everything is written in stone right now to help out, but you have to kind of speculate. And if you start speculating and getting it right now, you're going to be ahead of the curve in that regard. So that's a big plus. And then, like you mentioned, there's the platooning. But if you start digging in, there's still guys out there in the draft room that aren't platoon guys that are falling that you can try to play the game with, or you have to decide is they're quote unquote full time better than the platoon option. That's always another conversation. The relief pitching thing is going to be really interesting, because even in the listener DC auction we did on Wednesday night, the relievers were going nuts. Like, that was just an early, often pricey situation. And I'm really wondering, come Fab season, are we still playing this game? I hope it's not to that extent, but I'm wondering, because people are so concerned with saves. So that is a biggie as well. What is kind of your biggest differences you're seeing from the 150s and the 400?
The pitching got pushed up a lot more in the 400, because people always say, who do the 400s, that they draft more like main events. And you always hear about main events in the NFBC that starting pitching gets pushed up a lot. And so I told you this, I didn't tell the listeners when we started recording, but as of recording right now, my 150s in round 38 and my 400s in round 34. So they're pretty close in the same point in the draft. And just seeing the player pools, how they differ and how the pitching differs, that's available to me. That's later on in my 150 is about the same or even better than what my 400 has in its four rounds behind. So it's just I think it's more, it kind of ties in with the players, because the play, it's more than double the, it's almost three times the entry fee. So it's like I'm not saying people who do the 150s aren't serious, but it's a big step up in that competition, because you have like the guys, not everyone does the 400s. I don't know how else to put it, but it's just like
trying to phrase it a certain way. I get it. Yes, it's,
yeah, I don't want to like sound higher, like a higher, I don't want to like sound all like high and mighty so that I do 400s. It's just that it's just different until you're in it. You can't understand it. So it's good though. Like I think I'm going to try to prioritize my starting pitching like the middle round starting pitching a little bit more, because I did attack heavy pitching in my 400 because I knew that, but I didn't go back to it as quickly as I probably should have, like for my SP 5 or 6. I like them, but I don't know how strong they're going to be.
Yeah, no, it's kind of the same thing that we talk about with if you're doing an OC versus a main event. I know it's a 12 versus a 15, but when you start talking price points, the bills get different. We always say pitching gets pushed up in main events. There's a reason for that. When you're spending more money and you're also in the deeper formats, roster construction usually takes a different form, which we have seen time and time again. So that's kind of what it feels like with the 150s versus the 400. The 150, guys are willing to experiment more, where the 400, they're willing to, the 400s, they want that stable core because two reasons: the payouts are better and less you rake, it's like it stays in the event. So that is something you want to focus on, and it's just you're really, really prepping for the main events pretty much is the way that's how I look at it when you're in that 400. So and that player pool in the 400 is more the main event player pool, so the mindset goes in that direction as well. So that's
my 400. Yeah, and in my 400, I'm picking third. It goes Phil Dussault, Jason, I can't think of his last name right now. He does FTN pod with Jason Anthony. He does the FTN Anthony. Pod. Yep, he's second. It goes me. Then it goes Dusty Wagner, who's been recording with Rob D on the Deadpool Hitter. And then Vlad Sedler's fifth. So nice. All those guys are high-stakes players. So it's quite the room.
So tons of easy picks. They just leave you all the goods every time. Not a problem at all. So, yeah.
Piece of cake.
And then you're stuck recording with me. So yeah, it's good stuff around here.
I learned my lesson. I did a 150 before I did a 400, because normally I would start with the 400, and I need to get my feet wet before I do that from now on. So I'm glad with the choice I made.
Smart move. All right, we'll come back to that in the coming weeks to see how things continue to unfold, how things change potentially as you're doing other 400 drafts and whatnot. But oopsie. Not I screwed up. Oopsie.
The projection. I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, the projection recently dropped. So now we have Steamer, we have depth charts, we have the Bat X, we have the Bat, we have Oopsie. ATC, I think, comes out any day now, it feels like. That should be joining the party as well. But Oopsie is Jordan Rosenblum's projection system. This will be year two of it. Year one, it appeared to go pretty well. He's got his secret sauce like usual, but does use a lot of Statcast and changes a lot of things. Is there anything else you want to add about that? Because I'm not like super well versed in that, but I know it's a much different system, but it apparently did pretty well last year.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar. And one of the things we wanted to do for the show is actually compare last year's Oopsie to Performance. And unfortunately, I didn't save it off, and it's not available on Fangraph, so we couldn't do that. So yeah, I'm not too familiar with how it is, but just looking at some of the projections, I think it's a little more. It's not as conservative towards the middle, maybe. Maybe I think Jordan kind of tries to more predict what his numbers say will happen versus, okay, here's like a more steady baseline projection for any player. That's just what I got from briefly looking at the projections, but we'll see as we dive in, because I do want to compare the Oopsie numbers to my aggregate of eight of Bat X and depth charts, because that's what I'm drafting to right now is those two, and I never updated with Oopsie, which I don't know if I will or not, but maybe after the discussion I might incorporate it.
Might be a big oopsie if you don't, so I'll have to check that out. But I'm pretty sure in the draft tracker that Ryan puts together, Oopsie is in there with a couple other deals. And if you do the league predictor when you're done to see the league standing predictor, Oopsie is an option in there also. So a lot of different tools you can utilize to see how it goes. But on today's exercise, we're looking at hitters, and we're going to kind of look at the Oopsie projections versus the ADP and see where there might be outliers. Maybe, yes, league predictor thingy, that is correct in the chat there. But it's going to be like a we're going to look at guys that might be ranked higher according to Oopsie than their ADP, quote unquote, perceived value, or someone much lower than ADP, quote unquote, not great. So that's what we're going to kind of look at, give our thoughts on that and where we sit. And maybe as we pull up player pages, we'll compare them to other projections and see where things stand in the end. So Ben and I each picked out five players. We have a couple extras if time allows, which I have a feeling it will. So, Ben, I'll let you have the floor, and you can kick things off with your first player, who is a pretty polarizing player when it comes to draft season right now.
Yeah, I guess I'm giving my hand away a little bit here because he actually is my third baseman in my 400, and that is Austin Riley. I've been a big Austin Riley fan in the past. I was in on him last year, I think, and maybe probably even the year before, so kind of got burned a little bit by him, but I still have faith that he's going to be a pretty good player. And so, and also I'll say this now. So what we're comparing is the oopsie hitter rank, which is based on Z scores that I calculated using the projections, and it's the hitter Z score only. It's only looking at hitters. So it's Riley's hitter 19 per oopsie and my Z scores. Whereas in the last, so the ADP I pulled was from January 12th back to December 12th, those 25 DCs. And across those 25 DCs, Riley was the 46th hitter on average. So oopsie is more than is better than half is ranking. Well, it's 46 versus 19. That's what I'm trying to say. So it's a pretty big increase in his ranking. And when I'm looking at my aggregation of depth charts, which is Steamer with roster resource playing time. So it's depth charts and Bat X, Riley's hitter 33. So even those two like him better than ADP does, but they're still not even close to what oopsie has. And the lines, but for depth charts and Bat X is 88 runs, 30 homers, 97 RBIs, 3 steals, and a 260 average for Riley. Oopsie is almost the same at 88 runs, 33 homers. So 3 more homers, 1 more RBI, 3 steals as well. The difference though is the average is 272. So Jordan's giving Riley 12 more points on average, and that's boosting him up like a round or two up the board, depending on what you're looking at. And so the one thing that is concerning with Riley for me is his K rate. It jumped up a lot last year. It was 28.6%, which historically it was 25, 24 the previous four seasons. And that kind of caused his average to drop, even though it was in line with 2024. Riley had 256 2024, but he had 260 this past year, which is fine. His XBA was 246 in 2025, so pretty low XBA. And I think it's really driven by the strikeout rate, which is kind of the same deal with another third baseman, well, first baseman now, Rafael Devers. So it's kind of like the same. You have to kind of, I feel like if you're in on one, you're in on the other one too. But with Riley, his swing strike rate, which I try to look at too, did go up a point and went from 12.9 to 14%. I don't know if that's enough to increase the K rate as much as it went up. Who knows? But he was hurt. And if he's just not feeling 100% Riley, then I can see the K rate going. But everything else StatCast-wise, like his X slug, the barrel rate, the hard hit, even his bat speed didn't drop at all. It was a lot of red on his page. So I think he has the power in him still. It's just a matter of the strikeout rate. But you're getting a multiple round discount because Riley was like a round two or three hitter last year in 15 teamers. And I was in on him then and I have my first share of him already. So he's someone I'll be looking to. I know he goes in the range as Michael Garcia. So I don't know how much you would get Riley if you like him or not, but if you need power, I think he could easily return 35 homers. And I don't think the average is going to kill you. I think he'll be okay.
Yeah, a couple things. This already shows something that'll be a trend the rest of draft season when you talk, and you should know this already if you listen to Ben. Ben is more, if I'm wrong, please correct me. Ben is a much more projections drafter. He builds his projections, and if the numbers click, that's where he's going here. So that's first thing of why the Riley's standing out. Because if I got to play devil's advocate, the other people will be like, well, you know, he had the injuries the last few years. There's the concerns. That's why he's going later. But the projection is like him. And so that's where Ben can kind of move away from that angle for a second. Like, and kind of go, okay, this could be a perceived value to what Ben's trying to say. Where me, on the other hand, I sit there and go, oh, crap. I guess it's back-to-back years of injuries. Last year's wasn't great. I'm concerned. I'm a risk-averse drafter early on. So maybe I pass on the value. Like you mentioned Devers, who I like a lot. Yeah, the swing and miss went higher. Batting average drop, but the power is still legit. But like, oopsie, for instance, they have Riley as a 19th hitter. They have Devers as the 47th hitter. They have him hitting 252 with 29 homers, 91 RBIs, and 88 runs scored. So they have him at 4 fewer homers, 7 fewer RBIs, and 20 points of batting average lower than Austin Riley. That's a really large drop off there. When in reality, when you look at them, like Austin Riley's ADP is 46 and Devers is 39 over that 25 draft period Ben was talking about. So this is why I like these exercises, because if anything, maybe as draft season goes along, my opinion can change. Like, I'm not saying I'm running a draft Austin Riley by any mean, but when we start comparing them to players, like when Ryan and I did the third base preview, you start talking about rankings and ADP. That's what we discuss our players. Well, we discussed Devers before Riley. Like, that's just how it works. But if you're looking at projections and then you want to look at, you know, like how they stand, the outliers, so on and so forth, big gap between those two. But real quick, let me use that control F function that everyone loves to talk about. And we'll pull up Mikel Garcia, because this is where it gets even more interesting to me. He's just slightly ahead of Devers. He's the 44th player on Oopsie with an ADP of 48. So he goes two picks after Riley, but still, according to Oopsie, we're talking 25 guys later. So it's a major difference. Now, average is similar, but counting stats are way down. Power is way down. It's speed. He's got him in speed. Riley has him in the four other categories. So just throwing that out there. I'm supporting Ben's comments on Riley when you look at the projections. And then the third baseman's going right around him. It's Riley stands out if you are a projections person, like in a big, big way. So something that maybe I need to not change my whole focus on, but pay attention to more. Maybe it's not so easy is what I'm trying to say, just to take Garcia or Devers.
No, I would say that I agree with you. I think the biggest issue with Riley is this, the injury or the health is the biggest question mark. And then the, skills-wise, it's just the strikeout rate. That's like my big concern. And you're getting a massive, like I said, you're getting a massive ADP discount, and he's only 28, I think, 27, Riley. So it's not like he's an old, like, crippled man. He's relatively young still. So he could bounce back from these injuries, and they are different. Like, I think you guys were talking about on the third base preview, you and Ryan, that one was a broken bone. So the 1 year you can kind of throw out, okay, he does bad luck. And then last year with whatever, like the rib cage, like he had a knee, I don't know, he had something more muscular go wrong.
Yeah, it's like an oblique and stuff like that.
Yeah, oblique's always tricky, and they kind of shut him down because they were out of it. So, yeah, if you're worried about the injuries, I can't disagree with you. I just think I'm trying to be a little more injury agnostic as I progress in my draft. Well,
I should be, and maybe I should listen to your conversation here more, because I say it every offseason when we review positions. It's like, well, this guy was great. I was too scared to draft him because of concerns. And like, it's a 50-50. Like, half the time it is a valid concern. Half the time they play through it. So it's just the way it is. But I think more so I tell myself I need to do it with pitching, like the Chris Sale argument over and over again. It's just sometimes if they're healthy now, take them, see where it goes. It happens now. And I think if Riley hadn't done it 2 years in a row now, that might be a little different in my brain. But it's been back-to-back seasons. It's like, okay, this isn't a warm and fuzzy feeling. All right, my first player is a player that most know I have zero shares of and don't really plan on it, but this stood out to me, and that is free agent Bo Bichette. Bo Bichette, according to Oopsie, is the 30th hitter, according to Oopsie, on the ADP 68. That's a 38-pick difference. In, it's more than Austin Riley had. Bo Bichette stands out in a big, big way. You know, last year, 311. 18 homers, 4 steals, 94 RBIs, and 139 games missed the final couple weeks of the season. That 14.5% strikeout rate was outstanding. So, amazing season going into your free agency for Bo Bichette. Oopsie has him projected hit 289, so that's a massive drop from 311. And this is where it's interesting, because Bo Bichette has hit 290 or better in all but one season, and they have him projected for 289. He's hit over 300 in 4 out of those 6 seasons. So it's a bit of a quite the drop in batting average, to be honest. But 21 home runs for Oopsie. He leads all projection sites. Depth charts has him at 20, the BatX 19. So a massive boost there. 81 runs is kind of in line with everything. 84 RBIs in line and 7 steals. So he leads the pack in homers on Oopsie. And batting average, he's actually the lowest out of all the projection systems. So in like just top of my head looking at this, Bichette's actually probably pretty high on all these projection systems compared to where he's going. If you look at, to me, just looking at the stat lines that they're all projected for. So I guess for me, it's like Bichette at shortstop, I like to go get steals is where my brain usually goes. But at the same time, he's going to give you a really good average. If he gives you 20 home runs, you're sitting real pretty. Like he'd add, what do you have, 94 RBIs. He would have had over 100 RBIs last year if he plays the full season. Probably has 90 runs scored. He had a monster year last year. Now, can he duplicate that? Who knows? But he had three straight 20-plus home run seasons. He's had 90 or more RBIs twice. Like he's showcased some elite skills in the past. He'd be 28. It's a really interesting spot. We don't know where he's going to land. But for a guy that's the 30th hitter to have an 80, the ADP as a 68th hitter overall, that's pretty good, especially when he's going right after Trevor Story, who is the 61st hitter on Oopsie. So a very big standout. It's the 31 hitter differential between Bichette and Trevor Story. So I don't know if you have thoughts on Bichette, but he's a guy I usually just overlook in drafts. I know you don't, which you'll probably get to here in a second. But this another one stood out to me quite a bit.
Yeah, so I kind of disclosed some of my teams to you, but I will say that Bo Bichette is my middle infielder in my 150 DC that it's currently going. And it's first time I drafted him so far this year. I only have three teams so far, so 1-for-3. And you were questioning how Bichette is in the other two systems that, well, at least there's other ones, I think, besides the two that I have. But he's hitter 29 in the combination of depth charts and the bad X. So it's almost identical spot. And the lines are almost identical. The average, like you're saying, is 3 points higher with those two. And the other numbers are pretty negligible. They're almost identical. And for me, so, and also too, the way the Z-scores work, they, if you have a really good average, it's going to really drive up your value the way it works. So, because how often do you get a hitter projected for a 290 average? It's like Arias, Vlad, maybe Jacob Wilson, Bichette. And those are like the obvious ones. I don't know if Corey Seager gets projected for that anymore. Judge, actually, he's ridiculous now too, but you could probably count on two hands how many players have projections that are close to 290 for their average, and that's really driving it. Should I ask you the question now? Remember, I was asking you that philosophy. You want me to ask? You want to talk about that now, or you want to hold off?
No, go for it now.
All right. So I mentioned how Bichette is my shortstop in my 150 DC. My starting shortstop is Lindor, so I have Lindor and Bichette. So pretty two. I put a lot of draft capital into my two shortstops. And typically, I'm not alone with this. I try to have three players to each position. So I'm debating only going with these two shortstops. If I grab another guy who has eligibility at shortstop, so be it. But I'm not going to necessarily target another shortstop, I don't think. Would you do the same thing in my situation? Or would you consider it?
I would consider it. And this is why, usually I'm like you, I try to get at least three of each position. That's just standard protocol. But when you threw this question out, got my brain going, and I said, let's stop and talk about it on the air, is two things. As long as Lindor and Bichette don't get hurt, you're playing them every week. You're not sitting them. You made the comment to me off air, if they both get hurt, you're screwed anyways, probably. My question for you, and I think you answered it for me, I can't remember, to not take another shortstop for me, I would have to have plenty of depth at second base to fill in a middle infielder. That'd be my deal. Because, like, God forbid Lindor gets hurt, you put Bichette to short, but you have a good, like, a serviceable option at second to put in a middle infielder, or vice versa with Bichette and Lindor. But that'd be my biggest thing, is if you're only going to take two, it's a roll of dice for sure. Like, you're risking it. Most would probably say a crazy idea, but I get the logic here. As long as you have a extra second baseman or something that you're comfortable putting in the MI, because right now you're using one second baseman and two shortstops for your spots. It's pretty simple to understand, but you have to have that backup source. So you need at least three second basemen, and you probably have to be confident in all three playing at some point in time. And that's the catch. So if you have that, I can kind of see it.
Okay. Yeah. I just want to throw that out there. I know it's kind of sidetracked the projection thing, but I forgot about that. And I saw, like, oh, we're talking about Bichette anyway. It works out. Yeah. I have three currently, and I have a fourth who's eligible, Tommy Edman. And I might draft a fourth actual second baseman just to cover, so I have six MIs. But I thought it was a good question to bring up, because you always hear people talk about their DCs, like what their strategy is, and they always say, okay, I want three of each position, 10 outfielders, 11 outfielders, whatever it is, and they never say, but maybe I would go in fewer. Like, the only time you talk about that is really catcher. It's the debate of three versus four catchers is like the one you really hear a lot, but you never hear about, is it ever okay to go with two of a position if they're good enough? So I figured I'd bring it up.
That's a fair question, and I'm totally forgetting who I did some DC talk with earlier this year. But there was this – or no, it was with Sonics about Beck about the NFBC 50s. And it's the same idea, talking about roster construction. But then he opened my eyes to the, and it makes total sense, but my caveman brain needs to have it spelled out for me, is it's like, okay, the multi-position guys, well, yeah, now I got a second, third outfielder, MICI, you know, situation. With that being said, do I need to have, you know, three at the position or so on and so forth because I have it covered multiple areas? Can I change things up? So that's part of the conversation as well. That's where I was going at there. And then as Paul says in the chat here, odds of Bichette signs as a second baseman and gains eligibility quickly. I think he signs as a second baseman about this point. What about you?
Could be third base too, depending where he goes.
That's true. That's true. But yeah, I'm actually going to be surprised if he signs somewhere he's playing shortstop because everywhere he's rumored has a shortstop right now. So, all right. Back to the oopsie projections. Who is your second player to discuss?
I went with Joe Adell. He's someone when I was doing my rankings in general, I was like, oh, Joe had, well, A, he had like finally had the breakout season that we were all waiting for. And he had some underlying numbers to back it up. Let me pull Adell up. I was slacking. So oopsie has Joe Adell for 82 runs, 34 homers, 93 RBIs, 12 steals, 250 average. That's hitter 31, whereas ADP is hitter 72. And the combination of depth charts and the bad X has Adell as hitter 49. The big difference is the average. The average for Adell with those two is 237. Same homers, almost the same RBIs and runs. And actually, everything's a little bit higher except for homers with oopsie than the other two for Adell. And I guess so the first thing I've noticed is the average was higher with Riley on oopsie. Now the same thing with Adell. With Adell, let me pull him up on his underlying metrics because I want to have a full picture to paint. So one thing I really compared him to Adell was Kyle Stowers. They had very similar underlying metrics. Adell's XBA was actually 273. So maybe there's a chance that Jordan is seeing that XBA, and even Adell's K rate wasn't even that. It was high, but it wasn't like 30%. It was 26.4% on the season. So when you're hitting the ball as hard as Adell was, because he had 91 miles per hour EV, almost 92 miles per hour on average, his barrel rate was 17%. It was 17% barrel rate for Adell. It had gone up from like 7 to 11, and then this past year was 17. And so he's made huge gains in that. Not as many steals as he'd probably like, but with the projection of 10, that's definitely helpful. And his X slug was 565. Just excellent power numbers for Adell. So I think people are skeptical of Adell because he was going closer to pick 300 last year in drafts. And how much do you want to move a guy up going off of one breakout season? It's tough. Look at what happened with Jack Samero last year. Granted, he was going a lot higher than Adell is, but same kind of idea. You have a rookie, like Merrill's the extreme case of that. He was a guy going in the 400s in DCs, made the team, then was like a top, 30 hitter, probably 30 player overall. And then he goes in the third round and he's a bust. People are probably scared out with Adell because he does have kind of the worst, doesn't walk a lot. He chases a lot or more so than you'd like to see. And the K rate is kind of high. It's not horrible, but it's not good. But where he's going at that range, I think I have Adell on one of my three teams already. If I don't have him, I was looking to take him, and I would take him if I get the chance and it makes sense for me. But I think where he's going is a safe range, and there's some room for profit as well, even though people are kind of scared of pushing up too high.
Yeah, I love Adell. You don't have to twist my arm on this one. So I always enjoy when something likes him a lot more than where he's going in drafts. I guess the pushback I'm going to give, and you were hitting on it, is that 250 batting average projection is just so hard for me to wrap my head around because we really haven't seen him do that. He hit 246 in 35 games in 2021, but we haven't seen it. Like the last 2 years, pretty much, 130 more games, 207 and 236. Now, has he improved? Yes. You mentioned maybe he's using the XBA, which should be a massive jump. So his best XBA, 262. His X stats are all showing he underachieved. The barrel rate, which, and the hard hit rate, which Jordan definitely uses, is a massive plus as well. So I love everything about Joe Adell. I have no real arguments with what you have to say, I guess, besides do we really believe he's hitting 250? If he hits 250, he's worth every penny of this draft spot, because I do believe he's a 30-plus home run bat. He had 37 last year. Like, I don't see how he doesn't get to 30 again if he plays a full season. They have him for the 12 steals. That was, like, the biggest downside last year is he stole 15 and 24. And I'm like, okay, cool. We got, like, a 30-10 guy, and he only stole five bags. Now, I think he was battling, like, some lower body injury. Maybe wrong in that one. Who knows? But I think there is at least a world if you can get a 35-10 guy in there. They got him – oops, he has him 34-12. That goes a long, long ways. Now, the supporting cast around him is tricky, so run production will be all over the board in Anaheim. But the power is there. If the speed comes back and he can at least hit like 240, that'd be awesome. I just, that 250 projection from Oopsie is the hard one for me to get to, but hey, we shall see. And that's where it's nice to see some differentiation between the two. That is for sure. All right. For me, it's a guy that's near and dear to my heart. It's not a massive shift in projection versus ADP, but I'm gonna go Jeremy Peña here. He just stood out to me a little bit. Oopsie has him ranked as the 42nd hitter. ADP has him at 55, which is a 13 differential. But with Peña, I just like to bring him up whenever I can, because I feel like he's outside of that kind of elite shortstop tier and just doesn't get the full love he deserves. But it's a guy at 304 last year. He's usually like a 260-ish guy. They have him, every projection has him over 271, which is a plus. Every projection has him at least 18 homers. Oopsie has him 18, 79, 75, and 19. So projecting for almost 2020. And what I like about this projection, actually, compared to the others, like, they're almost in sync on every platform, which, again, we don't see on most of these. They all have him for 151 games. They all have him from 18 or 19 homers, 79 runs, 75 RBIs. The RBIs are kind of across the board. But it just showcases that the reason I love Peña so much is he's, to me, you can almost pencil in 15-15 with a serviceable average and you got a ceiling. The projections feel the same way. Like, this is a dude you should be able to rely on. They all feel the same way there. So just wanted to throw it out. All the projections basically have him going higher than his ADP, since they're, I'm going to say that out loud, because they're all projecting them the same way. That's pretty much how I look at it. And it's just another testament to Peña. Like he says, the 52nd hitter, I think is what I said, the 55th hitter off the board. And he goes, he's eight hitters after Perdomo, which is 16 picks at shortstop. I'm just doing shortstop only. You have Mookie Betts goes at ADP 64. That is a 32 pick differential. And if we want to look at it, like, Mookie Betts is the 50th hitter. So he's eight, according to Oopsie. So he's behind him eight spots there. And Perdomo is the 64th hitter, which is 24 behind Peña. So just a couple instances there where Peña should be much higher in the shortstop world is where I'm going with this.
Oh, yeah, I love him too. I have him actually ahead of Perdomo. Not ahead of Mookie, but I would just skip over Mookie and take Peña instead. And yeah, I don't have a lot to say. You're kind of looking at the raw totals for the other projections for Peña. And I'll just say, for the combination of depth charts and BatX, he is hitter 38. So pretty close to Oopsie's 42. Oopsie, I think, is kind of low in the runs and the RBIs. So that could just be a lineup thing, or I'm not sure how Jordan would go about projecting the runs and RBIs. But yeah, I like Peña. I know people are skeptical about the average being around 300, but the 270 baseline projection is still really good. And they're being conservative with fewer than 20 of runs, I mean, homers and steals, but maybe because he got hurt last year. I don't think he had a full year the year before. I know he's missed some time with injury, so maybe that's part of the issue. But yeah, he's a great 2020 good average, and he should hit in the top of the Astros lineup. So I'm a fan of Peña too.
Sweet. Let's hit our third shortstop out the gate here. Who's your next guy?
It's Ezekiel Tovar, someone who I haven't really drafted ever, but this one's wild. So see why I picked it out?
Yeah.
So Oopsie has Tovar as hitter 55. You want to tell him what hitter ADP he is?
114.
55 versus 114. I think for this early of a hitter, I think it might be the biggest gap between the two that's on the sheet. I'd have to go back and double check that, but I can't imagine one of a higher player being bigger than that. His line for Oopsie Tovars is 80 runs, 21 homers, 82 RBIs, 9 steals, 260 average. He's hitter 66 for Bat X and depth charts aggregated together. So still a big increase from his ADP. And it could just be a combination of people got burned by Tovar last year. He got hurt to play like half the year. He doesn't really run for being fast, but he did go into 2025 Tovar with pretty poor quality of contact or play discipline metrics. And that's kind of kept me off him last year. And I got lucky by not drafting him, but for the wrong reasons. But he's going to be in Coors. So any BABIP issues his BABIP will kind of compensate for any contact issues that he has or chasing issues that he may have. And Tovar's also like 24 still. He's really young. But if you're getting Tovar past, I think it's like round pick 200. I don't have the actual ADP number up. But if you're getting 80-80 with a positive average and 20 homers and almost 10 steals, he's going to be a great value. So maybe shortstop has a little more legs in the draft pool, because I feel like people were kind of – I had the sense too that Dansby Swanson's kind of like the last one you really want to have as your starter. But if you have faith in Tovar or you're trying to just get values at other positions and you kind of miss out on shortstop, like I did in my first DC, I didn't get Tovar though, unfortunately. Maybe Tovar is a pretty good flyer to take because he does have the upside. He does have cores with him. Look what happened with Hunter Goodman last year and then Nolan Jones the year before that or 2 years before that. So it can mask some issues with these hitters. And I think it seems like the projection systems, not just Oopsie, are kind of forecasting that with Tovar.
Yeah, Tovar is definitely one that my eyes have opened up to recently between the shortstop preview, discussing him, because I used to be with you, like the Swanson tier is kind of where my cutoff was, where I felt comfortable with life. But there's Tovar, who it was only like a year or so ago was pretty high up the shortstop rankings, and like you said, let everybody down. But and then I also saw his price in the auction, very palatable compared to some other shortstops. What stands out, he's going to be 24. He's super young. Yet last year was his third full season, which was cut short to injuries, as you mentioned. His batting average, kind of, it's a little lower, but has resembled what Jeremy Peña did all the way before last year's 300 season. Like, he's like a 260-ish guy. That's something you've seen with him. We saw 26 home runs. We've seen 11 steals. Strikeout rate actually dropped last year, which is great to see. And, like, you know, projected 21 homers, 9 steals by Oopsie. It's basically 20 to 22 homers, 9 to 11 steals across all the platforms, which is great. Hitting 260 to 265. You could live with that as your shortstop one. And you could survive, let alone your middle infielder. Like, there's a lot to like with that. So it is really interesting diving into these and seeing not just Oopsie, but all the projections kind of feel the same way, digging into Tovar. And like I said, 24 years old, still super young. Like, we might not even be close to where this guy is. There could be a year where finally, you know, Coors is all about increasing BABIP. Maybe we see a guy like Tovar who – his BABIPs have been high, 322, 344, 328, so that's helped him. But that's the ballpark. That's the world he lives in. So he can't just knock that and say, it's Coors. But the last thing I'll put on top of that, I mentioned these guys already, but, you know, Tovar is the 55th hitter. If we just want to talk shortstop, Trevor Story is 61, Perdomo 64, Swanson 65. So he's ahead of all of them, as you're saying. Tovar's ADP is around 192 right now over the last 10 drafts, just in comparison's sake. Swanson's 142. That's a 50 pick difference. Trevor Story's 110. That's an 82 pick difference. And Geraldo Perdomo, we know where this is going, pick 80. That's over 100 picks apart between Tovar and these guys. So there's something to keep in mind. If you do trust projections a lot, Tovar could, quote unquote, be quite the perceived value on this one. All right, here's one that I was shocked to see where it was located, because I don't know what to do with Lawrence Butler, the Law Dog. Like, there's always love for Lawrence Butler, but last year, between apparently the knee injury he had surgery on, that was kind of underreported, and just overall struggles, he still had 21 homers, 22 steals, but only at 234, Strikeout rate rose to 28.4% from basically 24%. So most of us are expecting a nice build off of 2024. It regressed. It was like a poor man's Michael Harris is what it felt like here. And that's changing Lawrence Butler's outlook right now. His ADP is 162 over the last 10 drafts. But if you look at Oopsie, Oopsie likes the law dog. Oopsie has Butler as the 62nd hitter ranked. He's 90th via ADP, Ben, which is a nice 28-pick differential. So when it comes to the law dog, I mentioned the 2020 season last year at 22-18 the year before. Oopsie has him going 22-21 while hitting 249, which would be an increase in the average, kind of put him in between the last two seasons, but put his power, his speed in line with everything he's done. 72 runs, 75 RBIs. I think there's a lot to like with the law dog. If you believe he's healthy, if you believe he can bounce back, just he doesn't have to be as good as he was in 2024 even. He just has to bounce back. And this could be one of those that, like in the auction last night, was the first time I was interested in him because looking at the price, I pass over him in every draft so far, maybe a flaw of mine. But at ADP 162, like I said, the 62nd hitter according to Oopsie, 90th hitter according to ADP, that's a nice little perceived value there.
Yeah, I like how you say perceived now. So
you got me hooked because it's true. Yeah. It's true. You're not wrong. Yeah. So
yeah, you never know until the season's over. Yeah. With me and so there's the two main things for me and Butler with being unsure is lineup position and the platooning. Because right now he's projected to hit 7th per roster resource and in the platoon. Let me see if I have it up right now. I think I do. Lawrence Butler. I have the percentage of at bats that he was facing righties last year. 80%, 80.5%, which is right at that threshold that I use for platooning versus not platooning. And you would argue, okay, he did actually platoon last year versus righties only. So that hurts. But he's going later in drafts. Now he's like around pick 150, I think, which is a much better than him going at like pick 60 or 70 like he was last year. And so you went through the projections, but because he's going later in drafts, the difference between his Oopsie projection and the aggregate of the depth charts and bad X is a lot less. Because the big difference that I see between that aggregation versus Oopsie is 5 RBIs fewer for bad X and depth charts and 3 fewer steals, and his average is 6 points lower. And that makes him hitter 85. But when you're going farther out into the player pool, those smaller differences have a bigger impact because the players are so close together. So 6 points of average is pretty negligible for projections. I feel like it's within probably the error of what they're capable of forecasting. But he proved he could do 2020 last year. I think is that 2 years in a row of 2020? I forget what he actually had in his breakout.
22 and 18 the year before in 125 games.
Yeah, so he's definitely a 2020 guy. Mm-hmm. So I should be more open to considering Butler, but it's hard for me at that range to be taking a platoon bat.
And it's maybe too.
It's maybe pause on Michael Bush a couple times because like Bush's underlying numbers were incredible last year. He is going to lead off for the Cubs, but is he going to platoon or not? And I don't know if the position is enough to offset the plate appearances from the other spots. And it's the same idea with Butler, except for Butler's hitting lower in the lineup. We think he could hit leadoff, but the A's have a lot of good hitters. They have Jake
Wilson.
It is Jack Wilson. I thought I was naming his dad.
It's Jake. No, it's Jake. His dad is Jack.
Yeah, it's too close. Jake Wilson. And then there's Kurtz could lead off. They have Langeliers who hits the top of the lineup. So Butler could just get pushed down, which would hurt. But 2020 at that point in the draft is still valuable. So maybe I need to I think I'm more open to drafting him after seeing this now than I was in the first three DCs. Because I do, like I said before, with I think I was just saying in general, talking about DC observations I've made so far, that the 100 to 200 range of outfielders is very interesting. There's a lot of solid guys, but there's no one that's really, I don't know. Everyone has their question marks, it feels like, but Butler could return that top 100 value. He could be like a top 75 player potentially. So I think taking a stab at him at least once is a pretty good idea.
Yeah, and Oopsie has him for 136 games. Most projections have him around there. So they're planning the platoon with the projections as well. So that is another angle to go with there. All right, who is your fourth player to discuss?
This is Josh Naylor. He was someone that Oopsie does not like. Let me pull him up. So Oopsie has Naylor as hitter 72. ADP has Naylor as hitter 41. So I think this is the first negative player, or the first, yeah, we'll say negative Oopsie player that we've discussed so far. And actually, Oopsie likes or dislikes Naylor more than Fangraphs and or the depth charts and Bad X. So for them, he's hitter 62 versus Oopsie 72. Looking at it, Oopsie has Naylor for less power. He has 20 projected homers versus 23 for the other two. Fewer runs, fewer RBIs. He has four more steals than the other two. He's projected for 18 steals on Oopsie, but averages almost identical to 257. And I think what's really hurting Naylor's value compared to his ADP is the runs and RBIs. And he has had some very he's had some wild fluctuations in his stats over the last few years. Naylor, he kind of is the new Ian Happ, because with Ian Happ there's many years we never knew what we were going to get. And just looking at Naylor's last 4 years, which have basically been his four full years in the majors, he went from 20 homers to 17 to 31 back to 20. He went from 6 steals to 10 to 6 to 30. His average went from 256 to 308 to 243 to 295. His RBIs went from 79, then he's been in the 90s or 100, but the runs have also fluctuated. They've been 47, 52, then 84, 81. So he had a history of not scoring a lot of runs, but he was playing in fewer games in those first 2 years, where that like his first full seasons, Naylor. So I think the projections, both Oopsie and the other ones, are just saying, okay, I don't know how many runs he's going to score. 70 is not as high as the 84 and 81 of the last 2 years, but it's kind of hedging that. Maybe there's a chance he goes down lower, like he did in 2022 and 2023 when he was around 50 runs, which is pretty horrible. They definitely regressed the steals down, but they would still be his next best career total at 18 for Oopsie. And even the I feel like the RBIs are too low because he's been at least 92 the last 3 years, Naylor. And like I said, he's 75 for Oopsie and 81 for depth charts and Bad X. So maybe this is why maybe you lean more towards the market a little bit, but hitter 41 does seem high. I haven't really been tempted to take Naylor yet in my three DCs that I've done so far. Just because I don't know, I feel like the stolen base is such a wild card. And like I went through his average, like you think he's a good average hitter, but he's shown that he can really hit for a low average as recently as 2 years ago, Naylor. So there's a lot of question marks with the profile, more so than I think a lot of other hitters going in the top 100 or I'd say top 50 hitters. So yeah, it's tricky with Naylor. I think he probably is getting pushed up a lot because of the 30 steals at first base. And I think there's more risk than just the steals of not being there.
Yeah, I agree. He's a tough one. I've passed in every single draft, and I used to be one of the bigger Josh Naylor fans out there. It's just, I think the projections kind of showcase how difficult it is to project him based on his inconsistencies that you mentioned. And a lot of the drafters are, it's, do you believe he's even a 15 steal guy? We've seen 10, we've seen 30, we've seen six or less. Like, which guy is it? We've seen the power, but only over 30 once. Is he a 20 to 25 guy, or is he a 30 guy? Like, the list goes on and on. Like, to your point, though, the RBIs, it's been 92 or more for three straight years. We should probably give him some love there, over 80 runs in two straight years. So there's some pluses there as well in the projections for runs and RBIs. But the power, the speed, they both regressed in the projections. Well, kind of regressed from last year, at least. And the average took a much, much bigger hit, though. It's kind of more consistent than his last, like in 2025, 295, 2023, 308, but everything else was more of a 250, 255 guy. So tough guy to project, it seems. And I get that. And that's probably why I usually stay away, because of the price you have to pay on the market that you mentioned. You have to be willing, like, to me, he has to produce closer to what he did last year, not closer to what he's done in the past. And that's where it's tricky for me to take him. All right. I'm going to talk about a player now that it seems like he's losing steam out there, but he's still a massive shift on this board, and that is Addison Barger. Everybody loved him last year. They saw the hard hit profile from 2024. It panned out. It was great. We already know all the rumblings in this preseason due to the platoons. That's a massive concern. That should have an impact on why he's not going as high as maybe some thought he would. He's got an ADP of like almost 210 right now. When you look at Oopsie, though, Oopsie has Barger as the 179th hitter, 179. He goes after Colson Montgomery, who is quite the name these days, just for a whole dollar. So keep that in mind. But Addison Barger, a 179, ADP hitter, 121. That is a 58 pick difference for Barger. And he's, again, 243, 21 homers last year, all solid stuff. But they haven't projected for 112 games, which is on par with the rest of the market. 18 homers, 4 steals, which is almost what he did last year. 248 average, 58 runs, 64 RBIs. So the runs and RBIs are down from last season. Oopsie has them. There actually seems a little more optimistic than every other projection for the most part. But it's baking in the platoon situation. And that's why I think it's good to look at the projection, because if he does platoon, there's a good chance this is who he is, which is the 179th hitter, not the 121st one going off the board, which is why maybe you should take a step back before you fall in love with a guy like Addison Barger. But just wanted to point him out because the projection is kind of supporting a lot of the conversation out there right now.
Yeah, I agree. Would you be shocked if I told you that he is hitter 191 between depth charts and Bad X? So even worse, they like him less. And you mentioned kind of how Oopsie's a little bit higher on all the stats, and then it lines up for Barger. I think there's two reasons why he's going as high as he is. They appreciate what he did for their teams last year, because he was a big waiver wire ad. He's probably one of the bigger hitters that you could have added in Fab last year. And when you start drafting right after the season ends, you're tied to those, like, what just happened. And I remember you actually, I forget what show it was, but you talked about stepping back and like disconnecting a little bit. Like maybe it was your resolution show or something. You were kind of talking about like looking back at what actually happened. Because if you go from, okay, season's over, there's playoffs, he hits this walk-off grand slam off a lefty, and now it's November 1st. Oh, I'm going to draft Addison Barger. He helped my team so much this year. He's young. He can get even better next year, but he can't hit lefties, or he won't hit first lefties. Looking at his splits last year, first lefties, he had a 607 OPS versus 790 versus righties. Only had 83 at-bats versus lefties. And based on my the tracking of his plate appearances, he hit versus righties 82% of the time. So well over the 80% threshold for Barger. And the other thing that I think is propping up besides him being a big ad is the eligibility. He's third base and outfield, which is a unique combination to have, especially for someone with 21 homer power. But yeah, I just think it's, for me, it's the platooning that's really, I don't think I'm as low on Barger as the projections are. I'd have to see where he is in my hitter rankings to get an actual number. I don't think he's as low as they have him, though. I have him around early 200s, I think, in my rankings, but he's not a target of mine because of the platooning. And he's solid, but I think there's better options in that range of the draft.
Yep, I don't disagree at all. Who is your fifth player?
Gleyber Torres. He was someone that I haven't really thought about a lot this year, what I've drafted so far. Oopsie has Gleyber for 78 runs, 19 homers, 73 RBIs, 6 steals, 263 average, and he's hitter 82. That's versus an ADP rank of 149. So this is a massive bargain per Oopsie. When I pull up the other two sets of projections that I aggregate together, Torres is hitter 106. So still a value compared to ADP, but not nearly as high as what Oopsie thinks. One of the big differences I see between Oopsie and the other two is 6 points of average in Oopsie's favor for Torres. And that's really it. So it's really the average is boosting him up a lot. And that's kind of what I was saying with Butler, is that the farther you go out into the player pool, the more smaller differences in projections have an effect in moving people up and down the ranks. So, and really the difference is it's two fewer runs for Oopsie compared to the other two. It's one more homer. It's 3 more RBIs, same steals, and the 6 points of batting average. And that makes a difference of hitter 106 versus hitter 82. So that's almost negligible, it feels like. So Also, it tells you to take projections with a grain of salt. Like if you're saying hitter 82 versus 106, you think a big difference, but in reality, it's not a big change. But also, like I've said in the past with other projection shows, that this is just a single ranking. Mm-hmm. It's not really telling you how the other players around Torres are being projected to get him to be hitter 82 versus hitter 106. So maybe Oopsie likes hitters less than the other systems do, and that's why he's so much higher up in their rankings. The way I did the Z scores, who knows? But regardless, if you're safe in steals at this point in the draft, and you can afford to not say you have a JRAM team where you have extra steals at third base that you wouldn't expect, or maybe you have JRAM and Agustin Ramirez, so there's 50 steals from catcher and third base, maybe your team can afford Gleyber Torres. And if that would be maybe you can plan that in an auction, or you get lucky enough in a snake, you can actually do that. So Gleyber has his value in the right builds. This is that you can't be looking for speed with that in my position. Maybe he could be a utility for you, but which is also a possibility as well. But I think you never hear Gleyber Torres mentioned. I don't think in your preview shows, you haven't mentioned him yet. Even Rob's preview shows, you haven't heard Torres really talked about at all. He's a very boring player, but he's got some good value to him.
Yep. When you get to the Tigers show, he will be discussed because we have to, but that's where he gets discussed.
and I haven't listened to that yet, like I said.
he has that boring is beautiful guy that, and the projections are almost in line with what he's done the last couple of years. Like three out of the 4 years, it's pretty close to what he's done for the most part. So definitely, like you said, if you don't need steals, he's a very solid, probably pencil it in type play in a 15. He's a guy I'd rarely ever see myself taking a 12. I think he's just so boring, people kind of just overlook him. That's why no one talks about him. It's just because it is who he is. I think we all know there's probably not another level to him. Like, we'd be shocked. So here's who he is. If this fits your mold, it's a great fit. Just make sure your mold, like, it fits. All right, my fifth one. Whew. Sit down, everybody. This one's going to get – I picked this for a reason. Sal Stewart, who I love as well. Love him a lot. Oopsie, projections, not so much. There's a reason, I think, behind this, but I'll say it in a second. Right now, Sal Stewart in drafts has an ADP of 214. Not bad. Not bad at all. Oopsie, and according to ADP, has the 126th hitter. 126th. ADP 214. Oopsie has Sal Stewart as the 216th hitter. That's a 90-spot differential between Oopsie's hitter rank and ADP rank. That is a massive drop off for Sal Stewart, who's a darling around the fantasy world. Power undeniable, showcased tons of speed for a power bat. I would say not tons of really good speed for a power bat. Hit for minors or average throughout the minors in 18 games. He had 5 homers at 255 in a small cup of coffee with the Reds this year. Oopsie has him for 15 homers, 6 steals, hitting 252 over 99 games. That's the kicker to me. And all of them, like Oopsie 99, Bat X 99, Bat 99, Depth Charts 99. They don't expect Sal Stewart to play a full season. And that's the conundrum right now. Does he platoon? Like, Roster Resource has him on the bench. He's one of their best hitters. That'd be crazy, but crazier things have happened. He should be their DH, unless they want to play him at first and move someone else to DH. But the projections are baking in right now that Sal Stewart is not a regular, and thus he is going to be much farther down the list every time. This is one of those exercises, like Ben probably has one. I know Ryan has one. I use it on the show by test, like making it. I make Ryan use it on the show, I should say, because I don't have it. But it's the old analysis. Okay, take the projection. Now use the 99 games and get the stat per plate appearance. They have them for 427 plate appearances. Now say you think it's a full season, up them to 600. Like, here's a steamer 600 exercise would be perfect right here. Sal Stewart probably rates out a lot better at that point, is what I'm trying to get at. Maybe not, but it comes down to, do you believe he's a full-time guy or not? Projections are baking in, he's not been. And that's why, to me, he stands out as a massive negative differentiator here.
Bubba, I came prepared for class, so...
I figured you would. I just didn't want to assume anything because that makes an ass out of you and me, so I didn't want to go there. What do you got?
So I mentioned after we did projection reviews how I want to incorporate Steamer 600 into my analysis a little bit. Yep. So with the aggregation of depth charts and the Bat X, Stewart's hitter 170.
Okay.
But when you compare it to Steamer 600, he moves up 116 spots.
Let's see.
So in Steamer 600, he's hitter 54.
And his ADP is 126. Now he's a perceived value at this point.
His line in Steamer 600, Stewart's, is 73 runs, 22 homers, 79 RBIs, 9 steals, 271 average.
Yeah, that's a big difference.
That's pretty good. That's like pick 100.
So thank you for being prepared for class. Pop quiz worked well there. But that's
it's
where
the average is the big difference between Oopsie and the other two, though, I'll say.
That's a great point. Yeah, because what Ben's saying, Oopsie has Stewart at 252, the Bad X 265, and Steamer 272. So those are massive differences, as Ben was even mentioning with Gleyber Torres. Those are jumps, and that'll affect the rankings quite a bit. But like, the power is undeniable. A lot of the skills are very, very good. It's just, what do you believe the playing time is? Like, this is one, if come spring training, word comes out that he's actually going to be starting, these projections will adjust and just watch things change quickly. And so this is where I wanted to bring him up, because everybody does love him. And as his ADP feels like it's actually dropping a bit, which is surprising, because 214 seems low. ADP tracker now, I'm looking at Ryan's tracker. It's 224 over the last 7 days. He has gone up as high as 189, but he's 189 to 237. He's in that world. But he's a guy that will climb a lot if things change. So I wanted to bring him up, though, to our point, is we're looking at guys, the pluses and minuses here. His minus is largely due to the fact of playing time, not so much skills, is where I was going with that.
Yeah, and I'll add real quick. So I did have Stewart in one of my main events last year. I added him early September, and then he was playing full time. And then once Brian Hayes returned from injury, he kind of started sitting Stewart. And then they also have, they have Spencer Steer.
Yep.
He's probably better than Spencer Steer, so it's a matter of the Reds realizing that or giving him the shot if there is a roster crunch. But Gavin Lux should be sitting. He shouldn't be starting.
Lux is the one that just needs to go. Lux is the one screwing this whole thing up.
Yes. Yeah, it goes like Lux, Hayes, and then Steer for screwing up Ometer for Sal Stewart. Yeah. Bleday doesn't help either, because no, Lux play the outfield too, but that's whatever. So it's tough. I guess it depends on league size. I haven't really thought about taking Stewart because of the uncertainty with the playing time. Maybe I should take a stab at least once in my DCs, just this, because you never know. And his underlying metrics were phenomenal in the short stint of being up last year. So the talent is there. It's just a matter of like our discussion has been. It's just all about the reps and the at-bats.
And it feels like in DC, he's like a really good pick to me if you draft the depth accordingly at first base corner.
Yep.
Because it just takes one injury and all of a sudden this dude's a monster and that ADP changes. So it's just, it's a lot of what ifs. I understand that, but that's pretty much what our game is. What ifs. And Stewart's kind of one of those game changers. Like, we could, people might speculate on, you know, Connor Griffin and McGonagall, who knows when they show up. Stewart's going to be on the roster opening day, barring a complete catastrophe in Cincinnati. So he's already there at least. Now it just takes one tweak to actually play. And that to me is a big difference. All right. You got a couple more guys down here. If you want to hit on those, go for it. And then we'll wrap up after that.
Okay. The next guy I mentioned was Jake Berger. Someone who isn't always mentioned a lot either. Let me pull him up. So Hoopsie has Berger as hitter 97, ADP a hitter 171.
Nice.
That's a big difference.
Love it.
Yeah, Berger just it was just really injuries last year, right, for him?
Yeah, a couple different oblique stints.
And Hoopsie isn't alone, because depth charts and Bad X has Berger as hitter 100. So it's a difference of three spots. They have them both for 29, 28 homers, 70 runs, 80 RBIs, and an average that won't hurt you. So it's just kind of like, well, it's a lesser degree of the Riley debate. It's okay, the skills are probably still there for Berger, but do you trust the health? But he's going so late. He's going in the 200s that it shouldn't really hurt you, especially in a fab league. I guess probably the issue with Berger in the DCs is that you're stuck with him all year. So if he goes through another 2025, then it's going to hurt, not just for Berger, but for you. But yeah, his barrel rate was almost 14%. last year. Hard hit of 48.5. His xFLAG was 490. His xBA was 257. And for someone who strikes, who hits that much, that many home runs, his K rate was 24.7% burgers. So he's not going to hurt you, like I said, an average. So someone who I should be more open to taking in those, in that 200 range.
Yep. Always been a burger fan. And it's kind of what you're saying there. If healthy, which has been an if the last couple of years, one of the more consistent dudes out there, 25 plus homers, hits 250-ish, like his quality of contact, as you mentioned, is elite. I've talked about him plenty. And for like another thing, like you said, for a big power bat, he doesn't strike out a ton, which you don't see every day. So I love Jake Berger. Just stay healthy, and we can reap the rewards there. What about this new Chicago Cub?
Yeah, it is. I didn't pick him because of the recent transaction, but Alex Bregman stood out to me as well. I think he's in the negative direction.
He is.
Yes.
So negative, yes.
Bregman's ADP is 70, hitter 70, and his oopsie ranking is hitter 98. So about 30 spots. That's at least two rounds difference. And this is interesting. So this is actually really good. This is a really good one. So for bad X and depth charts aggregate together, Bregman's hitter 61. Last I pulled this.
Well, that's a massive difference.
That's a bigger difference. Yeah, that's an extra eight hitters. And the big difference is the home run. So oopsie has him for 18, whereas the other two have him for 25. Average is only off by 2 points. Steals are the same. RBIs are off by 9. So oopsie has 9 fewer RBIs and 7 fewer homers, 4 fewer runs. So that's a massive difference with Bregman. And I don't think his stat cast is that bad. I know he's one of the pull guys. I guess, yeah. So the barrel rate is 29th percentile, 6.6%. And that was my concern with the move to Wrigley at first, was because of Bregman likes to pull down the line and it kind of juts out down the left field line there. But a bunch of his homers easily cleared the fence when you look at the spray chart over Wrigley for him. There are some that were doubles that I think in Houston that would actually be homers in Wrigley in left center field because of how the wall comes back in. So maybe it's gonna offset each other. Who knows? But I don't know. I haven't really been a Bregman guy since pre-bouncy ball, or since the bouncy ball era. It's been a while since I've really been interested in drafting him. And I don't know, the oopsie kind of is supporting my skepticism, but I think on the third base preview, you and Ryan were discussing him versus Jordan Westberg.
Yep.
And if you recall, I kind of questioned Westberg's projection when the first Bubba in the Bloom democracy draft was occurring.
Yes.
I have Westberg on two of my three teams. So I've kind of bought into Westberg, and I have taken him over Bregman when I've had the chance. So, Bregman's older too. He just got injured. A lot of question marks, I think. But I don't know if the 18 homers is pretty eye opening, because at that point, if the average isn't that good either, what are you really getting out of him? So I don't know. Yep.
Yeah. He needs to hit for average. Left field is not kind in Wrigley. There's another argument you'll hear. You mentioned Westbury. He's a 63rd hitter, according to Oopsie, which is a plus 13, because that's 76th. He's a 76th ADP hitter. Westbury's projected for 25 homers. That's 7 more than Bregman. 82 RBI, 77 runs, 6 steals, 257. Like, he's ahead of Bregman, it feels like, in most categories. So, yeah, definitely he's going about 4 picks after him in real life ADP. So, yeah, I get it. I get it tremendously on that one. Real quick, I had Isak Paredes I wanted to bring up, and it's mainly because you want to talk about a faller on this. Oopsie has Isak as the 234th hitter. 234th. ADP has him as the 127th hitter. That's a minus 107 differential. That is large. That is very large. And the only thing I can come up with here is they're concerned with playing time. Yeah, they got him for 105 games. He was injured last year. Otherwise, it was 153, 143. They have him for 14 homers. He had 20 before he was hurt. 55, 51, hitting 245. Like, he's usually average, can fluctuate, but if he plays 100 and, yeah, it's a 455 plate appearances, he should be a 20-plus home run guy. We're talking 70 at least. There's a lot to like with Paredes. Now, there are concerns. Like, Roster Resource has him on the bench. Little side note, Friday, your Astros preview will come out. And Russell Armchair Roto basically described how Paredes will not be on the bench if he's on the Astros or any other team. So there's ways to circumvent that. It's also, he's supposed to be ready by opening day. That's the other concern with Paredes. But with all those concerns, like the fact it's 105 games and oops, he has him as the 234th hitter was quite an eye-opening dive real quick.
Yeah, it was kind of surprising. I thought it was, I was assuming it was because of the he wasn't looking at the pull rate, Paredes's pull air rate, and just looking at his raw Statcast data, which isn't very good, but he gets by with the pulling of the fly balls, which has been well known for many years now with Paredes. Yeah, he's hitter Paredes is hitter 213 with depth charts and bad X. So they're a little kinder to him, but not by much. The other thing, yeah, I last time I had gone through the depth charts on Roster Resource, Paredes was the starter. I think it could have changed because I believe Dana Brown said that they want Yordan to DH a good amount, and that means that one of their infielders has to sit. So I guess they're assuming that Paredes is the odd man out. But and I know the Astros want to make a trade, so that could free things up.
Yep.
But I'll reference the Steamer 600 as well for Paredes because, like I said, he's hitter 213 for the two that I aggregated. He's hitter 123 in Steamer 600.
He's so 127 by ADP. So
there you go. So it's in line with that. And if he plays a full year, they're saying 79 runs, 26 homers, 80 RBIs, 248. I think the average would be higher because I think Paredes hasn't really hit that low before. He kind of manages to hit it for a decent average as well. So and if Russell thinks that he's going to play, I kind of agree as well. I think they're going to, because the Astros don't have the best depth, especially in the outfield. So I think they can't really be affording to play. They can't really afford to play all these subpar outfielders. They might have to just put Yordan out there more than they want. No, assuming they don't make a trade.
Altuve is going to go back out there. That's the rumor.
Who's going to go out there?
Altuve is going to go back to the outfield.
That makes sense. Didn't Paredes used to play second sometimes?
Paredes can play second. That's the thing. So there's that. Paredes can play second. Altuve to the outfield, or there's the Christian Walker rumors. And if that happens, Paredes goes to first base. There's two pretty good chances. One of those two should take place. Let's put it that way.
And yeah. So if Paredes drops,
Altuve's already said again he's willing to go back out there. So
yeah, and their left field is small. You just have to worry about like a mini monster. Just you have to deal with. You have to practice the caroms off the wall, and you should be set. You don't have to throw it very far to second. You don't have to run very far either.
Like Zach Cole shouldn't be keeping Paredes out of the lineup. It's like the Gavin Lux argument all over again. And Cole might be better than Lux.
I think they also added Myers to the lineup. I think he was a bench player for a while.
Yeah, he's starting in center field now.
But he has good defense, so it would make sense for Myers to play center field.
He'll play every day according to Russell. Like, there's no reason he wouldn't. Left field second base switch is what pretty much takes place. That's what it sounds like. Again, who knows, but that's what it sounds like.
That's a good one to call out.
Yeah, so I just wanted to bring that up with Paredes. He's quite low, and I don't think it's quite right. All right, got a couple of listener questions from the Discord here. R. Sand says, now that Willie Castro is in Colorado, how will his projection change? Let's pick up Mr. Castro here. It has not changed. I'd be shocked if it already changed. But he was projected for like 133 games. 12 or 13 homers, 16, 17 steals, 240 average. What are your thoughts on this one, Ben? I could say maybe more average for sure.
Yeah, it seems like a good bet because Coors has that BABIP effect. I haven't adjusted anything yet to Castro, the signing yet, or the trade. Yeah, it was a signing, but yep. I'll definitely move him up. I didn't even have him ranked Castro because I wasn't sure what the deal was because last he played, he was a bench player anyway, so I wasn't too confident, but it seems like he's going to play for the Rockies, and I think he's worthy of going in the 300s at least, probably, if I have to estimate where I probably move him into my rankings. Does he have eligibility at multiple spots still?
Oh, yes, he does. Mr. Slick Willie, second, third, and outfield, MICI outfield. That's a glorious DC situation.
Yeah, and he's playing in Coors, so I think early 300s for sure, I think is where his new ADP should be.
Yeah, he's at 385 right now. I think he's going to creep up to probably inside the 300s, I'd imagine, with the way hype trains go through that. But, Slick Willie should get a nice little bump when that gets all updated. As Paul says, this year's Thyro. God, I hope not, because that was...
Don't say horrific. That. Oh, man. Yeah. I have
PTSD. Dust, It was rough. Dustin Anderson says, you know, Saris said on the Rates and Barrels podcast that he believes Oopsie is the best projection system for pitching and an aggregator like ATC is best for hitting. Any thoughts? First off, I'll say Oopsie is a part of Eno Saris's Stuff Plus situation, so keep that in mind with this. I haven't dug in too much on the pitching this year with Oopsie just yet, but I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, because ATC is always really good. I like the bad X for hitting as well, but ATC is a little bit of everything. So, yeah.
So about a week ago, I saw a tweet from John Anderson, and he graded various projection systems for their accuracy for last year. The summary of what he found was for hitters, it was Oopsie and ATC for number one for the best. And then for pitchers, Oopsie was second. So he claims that his projection system was best for pitchers, and then Oopsie and ATC were tied for second. Whereas for hitters, Oopsie and ATC were the best. So sounds like a good debut for Jordan.
Yep, sounds good. And obviously it's just year one, so we'll have to wait and see. The other ones have been here for a while, but like the bat and the bad X is the bats for pitching, the bad X is for hitting for the most part, and that makes it difficult in general. So yeah, usually you use ATC or whatnot, but Oopsie seemed like they did pretty good. That's why I wanted to bring it up tonight. We'll probably utilize it some more throughout the preseason just to see where it goes. It's nice to have something that seems like it deters a little more from the other sites from time to time, if that makes sense. Where the other ones, for the most part, are usually in line. Like last year, we did a show comparing three and showing which ones were different. We'll probably do that again, but something there for sure. Not so silent majority says, between Roto, head-to-head, and points or category leagues, which do you guys prefer? Does Roto game take more skill and research? I think they all take skill and research, but I prefer Roto.
Yeah, I am. Every one of my leagues now is Roto, except for my home league, which is head-to-head categories. So if I had to rank it, I'd go Roto, head-to-head categories, and then points. I am not a fan of points league for baseball at all.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of head-to-head anything, but we have to.
Yeah, head-to-head is bad enough because of the playoffs and everything, but Roto is so tough because you can punt in head-to-head. You can't. True. It's so hard to punt in Roto. Like, you have to have a fairly balanced team, and it's such a fun challenge, I think.
Yep, putting the puzzle together is a big challenge. That's why draft season's so much fun. All right, Ben, we'll wrap it up there. We'll do it again here soon, hopefully next week, if not the following week for sure, but we'll be in touch, obviously, with that. Hope everybody enjoyed the show. Make sure you check out Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm at BDantrick. Until next time, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 813. Catch y'all later.